Okay, agenda item number 3. We'll take up the election of directors and management and shareholder proposals in the order in which they appear in the proxy statement. Then all these matters will be placed before the meeting for a vote. There will be time later on in the meeting for discussion of other business matters, but first we need to address the items that are presented in the proxy. The independent inspectors of election for this year's meeting are representatives of IVS Associates. The inspectors have taken the oath of office required by law and have been at work since the proxy started coming in. If you've already voted by proxy, there's no need to vote by ballot today unless you would like to change your vote. And I'll ask the ushers to pass out ballots now for anyone who has not yet voted or wishes to change their vote. Please raise your hand if you'd like a ballot here today. Now let's return to the election of directors and to the presentation of the proposals in the proxy statement. If you're a share owner and wish to speak after a proposal has been presented, just go to one of the two aisle microphones. I'll call on you there. Please give your name when you're recognized. The first matter is the election of directors. I place before the meeting to serve as directors for the coming year the 16 individuals whose names and biographies appear on pages 11 through 16 of the proxy statement, namely directors Beattie, Cash, Fudge, Hockfield, Immelt, Jung, Laughlin, Lane, Larson, Lazarus, Mulvin, Nunn, Penske, Swearinger, Tisch, and Warner. Each of these nominees has received the overwhelming majority of the more than 8.1 billion shares voted by proxy. Is there any discussion on these nominees? Dr. Borelli, good morning. How are you?
Board of Directors and shareholders, General Electric. I'd like to follow up on a question that I had last year that actually didn't answer. I think I was you quickly went to mic number 2 before you give me an answer. And that has to do with the consequences to General Electric from your close association with President Obama. I'm concerned that your high-profile relationship with the president and his policies can really yield a backlash from conservative voters, especially those active in the Tea Party. You know, specifically, General Electric lobbied for the president's $787 billion stimulus plan that really didn't stimulate too much of the economy. And, also for cap and trade, which you've actively lobbied for, which is part of Obama's agenda, and a renewable energy mandate. Now, all these issues are puts the company on a key collision course with Tea Party members, which, as you know, drove last year's election. So I don't, I came last year with a thought. Now I'm coming with data. Last year, our group, the Free Enterprise Project, part of the National Center of Public Policy Research and FreedomWorks, did a nationwide survey of conservative voters. And we asked them about General Electric's reputation. And going in, General Electric with conservative voters had a 50% approval rating. When we advised the voters, the conservative voters, of your positions supporting Obama's agenda, it plummeted to 20%. So that's a stark drop with conservative voters, which represents a large percent of the country. And then within the Tea Party segment, going in, your favorability with Tea Party activists was 28%. And when they were advised of your lobbying for the Obama agenda, it dropped to 13%. And then with conservative voters, 60% of the conservative voters said they would avoid buying GE products. So my question and my concern again is your high-profile stance with President Obama can have a reputational risk on the company. We've measured it. I have the poll results, which I'd like to distribute to your board of directors, and I'd like you to comment on the political and reputational risk of your close association with Obama and his progressive policies.
Look, Dr. Borelli, I'm not going to address those specific items again this morning. I would just add what I said earlier, that 96% of the revenues of GE are private sector revenues. We are not a big supplier to the U.S. government. We're a free enterprise company.
I never said you were a supplier to the government, but you need the government to give the policies for the subsidies for your business. The point is about your reputation and consumers. Do you know if your electronics business is being hurt because of conservative activists concerned about your close association with the president, who promised, by the way, to make energy prices skyrocket?
And now again, Dr. Borelli, I have immense respect for you. Our market shares and all of our technologies are growing, and you know, it shows by strong double-digit order rates and things like that. So,
so you have no concern about the reputational effect.
Again, I have great respect for you, sir.
So you're not
let's go to microphone number
I'd like
two.
To distribute this to you, Board.
Microphone number two, yes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Frieda, and before I cast my final vote this morning, I would like to make some comments and get answers to some questions. I would like to congratulate you on the performance of our company this past year. It was nice to see the price of GE stock rise to over $20 a share, as well as the increase in the dividend to 60 cents per share annually. But before we express satisfaction with these results, I would like to remind all of my fellow shareholders where we started. In 1999, after the last 3-for-1 stock split, GE was priced at $60 a share. So although we have made significant strides in raising the price of our stock, we would need an increase of 200% from its current price just to get back to where it was in 1999. Now let's turn our attention to the state of our dividends. Since reducing the dividends by almost 67%, you have raised them by 50%. However, I would like to remind share owners that it would take a 310% increase just to get them back to where they were before the reduction. But, Mr. Chairman, I am here this morning to speak on behalf of GE retirees, current retirees, future retirees, and even retirees who have not yet begun to work for GE and its share owners. In your letter to share owners in the 2010 annual report, you said we have changed our employee health care and pension plan to be more competitive over the long term. Let me translate for the share owners. You have asked your employees and pre-65 retirees to pay considerably more for their health care, and you made it more difficult for employees hired after January 1, 2005 to enjoy the security of a pension and eliminated company-subsidized retiree health care completely. In addition, I understand that employees hired after January 1, 2012 will not be permitted to participate in the GE pension plan at all. Your letter also states that looking forward, we have reduced GE's vulnerability to tail risk events. If, Jeff, you find it necessary to view pensions and retiree health care as tail risk events and curtail and eliminate them as a matter of good business, let me turn your attention to two other tail risk events: the supplementary pension plan and my personal favorite, the appropriately named excess benefit plan. These plans are enjoyed by only a small percentage of the GE employees. The annual report shows that the projected benefit obligation of the supplementary pension plan at the end of 2010 is $4.43 billion. This is an unfunded plan, which means nobody has contributed into it, and its payments come directly out of the pockets of GE shareowners. If, Mr. Chairman, you are serious about dramatically reducing GE's vulnerability to tail risk events, eliminating these plans would not only be a good business decision, but also a no-brainer.
Thank you, Bill. Are you?
Not quite.
Okay.
In this year's letter, you make several references to leaders and leadership, and very few about employees who actually perform the work for GE. Leaders are important, of course, but they would be meaningless and ineffective without the men and women who actually build the airplane engines, turbines, locomotives, and medical equipment the GE sells. It is disrespectful to marginalize their loyal contributions when they retire, while creating an aristocracy and financial windfall for only a special few. Jeff, I am not asking you to break any promises that have already been made. I am asking you and the Board of Directors to eliminate the supplementary pension plan and the excess benefit plan for any new employees hired after January 1, 2012. As an additional step to, as you have so eloquently stated, reduce GE's vulnerability to tail risk events.
Thanks, Bill. Microphone number one, yes, sir? Remember, we're just voting on directors so far, so.
Yes, well, this pertains to that. Good morning, Mr. Amell.
Good morning. Yes, sir.
My question pertains to your role as on the council on competitiveness and jobs. In that capacity, who do you represent there? Do you represent shareholders or broader American people? Would you ever advocate anything that was not in the interest of General Electric or its shareholders?
Again, sir, I think all of us that serve in councils like that just try to represent our best judgment Frequently, you know, because of my foreign point of reference, they'll be associated with GE, but not all the time. But I do think it's important for the private sector to try to be helpful when they can and try to use independent judgment as part of that, sir.
But if there is something that would hurt General Electric, would you oppose it? Would you speak out strongly against it?
I just don't want to give this kind of black and white philosophy. I want to be helpful. I want to try to do my best to help. That's what I want to try to do.
I think shareholders would appreciate it if you were helpful to shareholders.
Okay, I respect your view, sir. Thank you. On microphone number two, yes, ma'am.
Good morning. Deneen Borelli from the National
Center. Hi, Mr. Borelli. How are you?
I have a question before I vote for the board. It's regarding your stance for a price carbon. Do you have full board support from General Electric board members to back up your efforts for pricing carbon, and that is to tax fossil fuels, which in your mind will spur development of renewable energy products?
Again, Ms. Borelli, there's no really legislation at all on that today. And
no,
we've discussed these things.
Of course. Yes, ma'am. All of your board members?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So James Mulva, CEO of ConocoPhillips, that's fossil fuels company.
Again, I think
his full support.
We've had
to
these
tax
discussions.
Fossil
ma'am.
Fuels?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You have his full support.
Yes, ma'am.
And James Tisch as well. He has a number of subsidiaries that are fossil
fuel. I think
all of us
participate in the oil and gas industry, even GE. We've got an $11 billion business in oil and gas, ma'am.
So with this initiative, you're taxing fossil fuels, which would make them much more expensive. Energy prices are already going up, and Americans are already being squeezed with higher energy prices. So you have no problem taxing fossil fuels.
Again, we believe in technology and a broad array of technologies, solar, wind. We're big in natural gas. We've got coal turbines, steam turbines. We make all those technologies, ma'am.
But today, those aren't comparable with fossil fuels.
Again, we make all those technologies.
We have no problem taxing fossil fuels. I just want to make sure I'm clear on that.
Thank you, ma'am. Microphone number one. Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Richard Barnes. I'm the son of Elva Barnes. She was a long-term shareholder in GE, always has greatly admired your company. And it was always her dream to attend the annual shareholders meeting. So I'd like to tell you thank you from the bottom of your heart for bringing the shareholders meeting here to my hometown, Salt Lake City, Utah. Please know you and all any shareholders meeting is welcome to come to Salt Lake anytime. Tourism means a great deal to us, and I appreciate all the nice products you do. The medical things were helpful to my mom on her, you know, throughout her
great.
Life. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Next on the agenda is the proposal to ratify selection of KPMG as independent auditors for 2011, which I placed before the meeting. We have with us today Mr. Tim Flynn and Mr. Bill O'Mara. Your board of directors recommends ratification. Any discussion on that? Let's see. The next item on the agenda is management proposal say on pay. The advisory resolution on executive compensation for the board of directors recommends a vote for the advisory resolution on executive compensation. The next proposal is the next advisory vote is on the future frequency advisory votes on executive compensation. The board of directors recommends a vote for every year. Discussion on that. Okay, shareowner proposal number one. To be sure that all the proponents have an opportunity to present their proposals today, the presenters and other speakers should confine their comments during this portion of the meeting to the subject matter of the proposal which has been presented. We'll then have an opportunity to discuss all the items later. Shareholder proposal number one was submitted by Evelyn Y. Davis and asked the board to take steps to provide for cumulative voting in the election. Mrs. Davis couldn't be here today, so I place her proposal as set out in the proxy before the meeting. Any discussion on that proposal? Yes, sir, on number two. Okay, so that's proposal number one. Proposal number two relating to the future stock options was submitted by Trout Trades, an S&P 500 index fund. I understand that Mr. Glenn Johnson will present the proposal on behalf of the fund. Mr. Johnson on microphone number two. Yes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
Members of the board and fellow shareholders. My name is Glenn Johnson, and I'm here to present the proposal submitted by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW. Which can be found on page 50 of your proxy statement. The IBEW asked the Board of Directors to adopt a policy that all future stock option grants to senior executives be performance-based. To qualify as performance-based, an option must have an exercise price set above the market price on the grant date or vest upon the attainment of a performance objective. Implementation of this policy is important at this time because the company's compensation committee recently shifted the focus of executive equity awards from its historical mix of restricted stock and long-term performance units to stock option grants. According to the company's 2010 proxy statement, executive officers as a group received stock options to purchase 7.1 million shares, and in March of 2010, the company's CEO received a grant of 2 million stock options. These option grants lack performance vesting criteria and could result in the company's executives being rewarded for market gains unrelated to the company's specific performance. This is of particular concern since the company's share value was at an unusually low level at the time of grant. Adoption of this proposal would provide challenging performance objectives and serve to motivate executives to enhance long-term corporate value. Please support this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And now I'd like to introduce Mike Cerrone, my colleague, to add an additional comment to what I said.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Cerrone.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Mike Cerrone, and I'm a retired IUECWA member from Philadelphia. I rise in support of shareholder proposal number two. It makes no sense to reward executives with stock options that have no link to performance of the company, yet the board of directors is recommending against approval. That is to be expected. General Electric has a long history of fighting to keep higher compensation for executives, but is more than happy to allow tens of thousands of hourly retirees who built this company to fall into poverty as the value of their pensions continuously erodes from inflation. The GE pension plan should be changed to add a cost of living adjustment. That makes a lot more sense than handing out stock options with no performance criteria. As a recent retiree, I am not suffering like those who struggle to live on a couple hundred dollars a week, but I soon could face a significant financial hardship if GE gets its way and makes me pay much more for my health care. I already have to pay premiums as an active employee and not my pension check. Now you want to adopt a massive cost-shifting exercise hidden behind a smokescreen of better health outcome in a consumer-directed plan. GE, do the right thing and allow your retirees to live with dignity, respect, and financial security. Add a COLA and stop pushing for the outrageous cost-shifting health care plan. GE is no longer viewed as one of the premier places to be employed and retire from. GE employees and retirees are valuable human capital, not just numbers. Your employment package for salary workers is a disgrace and can only serve as another roadblock for attracting and retaining top candidates for employment. We worked hard and long for the company and helped build the value of GE. A company is aided in its growth and prosperity by how it treats its employees and its retirees.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Only have a little bit more.
Jeff. Okay, great.
Mr. Immo, I realized that when you were chosen CEO, you weren't handed the best of circumstances. You've made inroads by bringing back some manufacturing to this country, but more needs to be done. Manufacturing helps this country and its businesses that operate here to prosper. It's time to bring back the barges, and I believe you realize that. Hopefully, you'll share GE's prosperity with retirees in the form of COLA and increases the dividends for all shareholders. Don't forget, the retirees are huge shareholders. In closing, I was fortunate enough to have known Helen Carini. I view her as an esteemed role model. I can only hope to be half as dedicated as she was. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. A shareholder proposal number three relating to a withdrawal of stock options granted to corporate executives was submitted by Mr. John Hepburn of New Zealand. I know Mr. Hepburn is here today. Good morning, Mr. Hepburn.
Good morning again, and good morning, everyone. You will find my shareowner proposal on page 51 of the proxy statement. It reads, resolved upon an affirmative vote that the shareowners of General Electric request that the Board of Directors take the necessary actions to withdraw in sufficient numbers stock options granted to 9 corporate executive officers in 2009 and 2010 to leave the remainder close to levels granted in the years 2002 through 2008. Most likely you will have read my supporting statement, so over the next 4 minutes I will provide you with some background, emphasize key items, and update vital figures. You may have noted that I live in New Zealand. Like GE, I am multinational. If you have some trouble with my mongrel accent, I apologize in advance. It is partly New Zealand, also Canadian, originally Scottish. Turning back to my proposal, here is some background. Our directors really did not want you to have this opportunity to vote on it. On their behalf, the company's Washington law firm wrote a 7-page letter to the Securities and Exchange Commission asking that its staff concur in the director's view that my proposal be excluded from General Electric's proxy statement because, and I quote, the proposal is so impermissibly vague and indefinite so as to be misleading, so that neither the shareowners voting on the proposal nor the Board of Directors in implementing the proposal would be able to determine with any reasonable certainty what actions or measures their proposal requires. In a 1.5-page letter to the SEC, I repudiated these assertions and included a straightforward calculation of how the proposal might be implemented. The SEC came back with a letter to the law firm stating, we are unable to concur in your view that GE may exclude the proposal from its proxy materials. 2 weeks later, the law firm wrote a second letter to the SEC, 8 pages long this time, in part attacking my short letter, requesting that SEC staff reconsider their decision. The SEC's deputy chief counsel responded briefly to the law firm, stating, after reviewing the information contained in your second letter, we find no basis to reconsider our position. So it was a bit of a struggle, but here we are today. It is the opportunism and magnitude of these option grants that I find unwarranted. A mere 6 days following our shares plunging to a 17-year low in March 2009, a price collapse from $42 of 86% over 16 months to $5.73, our directors were dealing to corporate executive officers the equivalent of a royal flush in stock options grants with, unlike Mr. Immelt, no performance conditions. This timing was also 6 months prior to the historical September date that had prevailed for at least 10 years. Then there's the quantum, each vice chairman, for example, receiving over his 2008 grants a 6-fold increase in 2009 and more than a 3-fold increase in 2010. So, what are the updated figures with respect to share owners in the second to last paragraph in my supporting statement, which was submitted 6 months ago? Despite a 3-cent increase in the quarterly dividend since then, the annual dividend rate is still 52% lower than in 2008. Now, while the S&P 500 index has now recovered to a level some 14% off its late 2007 peak, our GE shares are still 52% lower than their late 2007 peak. Each of the vice chairmen, how are they faring? For much of February, GE shares traded above $21, reaching $21.65 on the 14th, at which price their 2009 and 2010 stock option grants combined were in the money to the extent of $25,810,000 each, almost $26 million. Now, in the 4 years 2004 through 2007, GE shares traded mostly between $30 and $40. If our shares recover to just the low end of that range, $31, which is halfway between today's price and the 2007 peak of $42, their gain of $26 million doubles to $52 million each. So in conclusion, I would like to thank you all for listening to what I had to say And to those who have already voted for my share owner proposal, a second thank you. For those of you still to vote, I ask that you please vote for. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Share owner proposal number 4 relating to climate change risk disclosure was submitted by National Center for Public Policy Research. I know that Dr. Borelli is here today to present the proposal on behalf of the National Center for Public Research. Ms. Borelli?
We urge fellow shareholders today to vote for our proposal calling for our company to disclose the business risk related to developments in the scientific, political, and regulatory landscape regarding climate change. Our proposal has sound footing since it is based on guidance issued by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Candid and full disclosure of business risks is embedded in SEC policy, and it serves the best interests of shareholders. Disturbingly, GE appealed to the SEC in an effort to block this proposal from appearing in our proxy statement. Thankfully, management's high-priced legal team lost, and the SEC sided with us. Why would Mr. Immelt want to block a proposal seeking disclosure surrounding the company's climate change business strategy? What is ML trying to hide? The answer is clear, shareholders. ML is trying to hide the fact that demand for wind turbines, solar panels, and technology that captures carbon dioxide from coal-fired power plants depends on government action, and that is politics. Plainly speaking, ML needs federal and state legislation to drive demand for GE's renewable energy products. The problem with renewable energy is that they are expensive and far less efficient in generating power from fossil fuels. So ML needs the boot of government to drive sales. Accordingly, ML's climate change business strategy is really a political strategy. His political strategy is twofold: raise the cost of fossil fuels through legislations such as cap and trade, and legislate demand for renewable energy by mandating a renewable energy standard, where the government mandates a certain percentage of electricity must come from renewable sources. And this is why ML has partnered with President Obama to raise the price of fossil fuels through a cap and trade scheme that, according to the president, would make electricity prices skyrocket. Skyrocketing electricity prices from fossil fuels is needed to level the economic playing field with costly renewable energy products. The problem for ML is the real change has not been the climate, but the political atmosphere that is reducing the prospects for renewable energy products. The Waxman-Markey cap-and-trade bill that would have taxed fossil fuels and forced Americans to derive 25% of our electricity from renewable products died in the Senate. A leaked company document emphasized the importance of this legislation for the company. It said, and I quote, "If this bill is enacted into law, it would benefit many GE businesses," end quote. ML, you can't have it both ways. Since the passage of Waxman-Markey would have been good for business, its failure to become law is obviously bad for business. A failure of cap and trade to become law constitutes a business risk. Republican control of the U.S. House of Representatives greatly reduces the likelihood that any cap and trade legislation will be adopted by Congress. Without cap and trade, ML's hope now resides with President Obama and his call for a clean energy standard that calls for 80% of our electricity to be derived from renewable energy by the year of 2035. Republican control may also reduce the chances of Obama's clean energy standard. Government fiscal considerations can affect business plans. Demand for companies' renewable energy products is affected by government subsidies, but this source of funding can suddenly be reduced or eliminated. For instance, budget deficits in the European countries resulted in subsidy cuts for wind and solar energy, creating substantial uncertainty for investors. Our nation has soaring budget deficits and debt, and may also reduce government subsidies for GE's renewable energy products. The business challenge facing renewable energy was made clear during a recent company conference call. On April 24th, Reuters reported that GE acknowledged that the demand for wind power dropped to about half of its 2009 sales because of competition from natural gas that is far cheaper. Clearly, in a free market, utilities would choose the cheapest and most reliable forms of energy, and that is not wind power. As shareholders, we have a right to know that ML's renewable energy strategy is a boom or bust gamble on the shifting winds of politics. That is why I urge you, my fellow shareholders, for your support on this proposal, calling for GE to disclose the business risk of the company's climate change business strategy.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Sperling. Chairman, proposal number 5 relating to transparency in animal research was submitted by Julia Randall of Chevy Chase. I understand Ms. Randall is here and will present the proposal. Ms. Randall?
Hi, good morning. Our comments on this proposal will be made by Julia and myself, Jessica Sandler. I head the regulatory testing division for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. If you're not aware, PETA is the largest animal rights organization in the world with more than 2 million members. Let me begin by saying that we tried everything we could in order to avoid bringing this shareholder resolution. After withdrawing our previous resolution in 2006, we entered into a very productive dialogue with GE. GE made some serious and important changes to the way it used and housed the animals in its chemical division testing. It was groundbreaking, actually, and we were happy to tell any reporter who asked what a good job GE had done in this area. In 2008, however, after its chemical division was sold off, we asked GE to bring its healthcare division, including Amersham, into the discussions. Despite our good faith efforts, GE responded by cutting off all communication with us. This turn of events is particularly concerning given the fact that there appear to be some expensive, animal-intensive, and outdated methods being used in GE's healthcare division. Even a cursory review of Amersham's catalog reveals that GE is using animals when animal-free replacements exist and not taking advantage of money-saving methods. For example, it would appear that the company is using a method of antibody production so painful that the National Institutes of Health has recommended against it, and several countries have banned its use, including, interestingly, Amersham's home country of England. This procedure causes enormous tumors that balloon from the abdomens of the animals, resulting in severe pain and distress. It has been superseded by modern non-animal methods that are far more precise and reproducible, as well as less costly. The fact that our company apparently still relies on this animal method speaks clearly to the need for greater transparency and accountability. In addition, based on other information we've received, it would appear that GE's Animal Experimentation Oversight Committee, which is the animal's last line of defense, is not functioning properly. The type of reporting that we are requesting is done by other companies, including highly competitive and successful multinational corporations. GE issues similar reports regarding its ecological footprint, and your efforts to reduce your use of animals in laboratory experiments should receive the same attention. Excuse me, it's hard for me to... Oh, I'm sorry, it's just there's some talking going on here. It just makes no sense to claim, as you do, in your opposition to this resolution, that GE only uses a very limited number of animals, and at the same time argue, as you did to the Securities and Exchange Commission, that you can't implement the resolution because it would require too large of a research project. How can you track your progress to reduce and replace animals, which your own stated policy calls for, if you don't know what your starting point is? In addition to animal welfare concerns, our requests have a scientific basis. The National Academy of Sciences has issued an extensive report showing that new non-animal technologies can deliver more predictive data based on human physiology, and that they can do so more quickly and affordably. Given the fact that the Food and Drug Administration itself states that 92% of drugs that pass animal tests go on to fail or to cause harm in people in clinical trials, it is clear that the current system isn't working well. This failure rate is a poor return on our investment.
Thank you,
as
ma'am.
Well as a threat. And just one last thing on a personal note.
Thank
I've
you,
actually
ma'am.
Had some great discussions outside with some
great.
Of your scientists who are working on great 21st century technology. You should be proud of that technology. So please, we ask that you resume our discussions
thank
with
you,
us.
Ms. Sandler.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am, on number one or number two? Number one. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Colleen Gardner-Hatfield, and I'm a stockholder in GE for just the last few years. My brother recommended it, and I did not know until a few days ago there was even, because of a move of address, I didn't get my mailing on the issues that are in front of you today.
Yes, ma'am.
And so once I found out, the only thing that I ask is that if it is necessary that there be animal testing, if mathematical modeling won't work, if stem cell research won't work, then let's do provide transparency. If we're proud of it, if it's moral, if it's ethical what we're doing as GE stockholders, then let's provide transparency and shine a bright light on it and bring good things to all life.
Thank you, ma'am. Number two, yes, ma'am?
Finally, I'm Julia Randall,
who
issued the proposal, an advocate of PETA. I live in the Washington, D.C. area, a few miles from the White House and Capitol, an area in which you, Mr. Immelter, are perhaps visiting frequently as you form these new business relationships. Our purpose today is to ask you, Mr. Immelter and company, to once more open the door to the work of PETA. With more scientists on staff than any other animal protection organization, PETA addresses animal experimentation from an ethical and scientific standpoint. Let us, to use your terminology, snap back, renew our relationship, and combine our efforts on this critical issue.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's move to agenda item number four, balloting. Remember, we'll provide an opportunity for discussion on other business matters shortly, but balloting on the items in the proxy statement comes first. If you have a ballot ready to turn it in, please hold it up, and I'll ask the ushers to pick it up from you. Great. Agenda item number five on the agenda, questions and discussion of other business matters. We've already heard extensive comments on the issues raised in this year's proposals. To be fair, we will give other share owners who haven't had a chance to discuss matters which may be on their mind. So if you wish, please come to the microphones. Is there anyone that wishes to discuss an item? Dennis, on mic number one. Welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. In lieu of my proxy proposal, I have some comments. This is my fourth consecutive appearance at our annual meeting. I am trying in a common sense way to improve corporate governance and board composition. Perhaps here in Salt Lake City, I can repeat Brigham Young's assessment that this is the place. The current directors are people of considerable ability and accomplishment. I seek not the board's total or sweeping reconstitution. Rather, I suggest modest but important refinements. In my view, three elements must always be central to our board's composition and conduct. First, each director must be of the highest character, integrity, and credibility. If ever a director's personal or professional performance becomes besmirched in any way, he or she, like any underperforming GE employee, must be encouraged to flourish elsewhere. It may be difficult to define in advance any such reputational fall from grace, but anyone with reasonable analytic skills will quite easily recognize such a failure when it occurs. The board needs to sharpen its sensibilities and oversight in this regard. Second, our board must have an outstanding record of professional achievement in an enterprise directly relevant to ours. For example, if we currently had a trio of media-savvy directors, why should they remain after the sale of NBCU to Comcast? Nor should we retain a cadre of consumer marketing mavens when we have largely exited those businesses. To illustrate my point, where was our Steve Eisman when we needed someone like him to assess properly the level of risk assumed by GE Capital, especially in real estate? Third, our board must exhibit a strong self-renewing capability. Becoming a GE director at age 45 is not a ticket for a quarter century ride, irrespective of performance. Perhaps we ought to examine more critically the possibility of term limits or institute an average tenure tipping point. That is, if the average board member has 12 or more years of service, then the longest tenured director would not be renominated. Apparently, my proxy proposal for force ranking all long-term directors, with the lowest rated director not being renominated, was deemed too blunt. Be that as it may, I strongly encourage you to fashion appropriate mechanisms to assure shareholders of the very best board practicable. Another idea that might be worthy of your contemplation is a reduction in the number of board directors. The company has become smaller and less complex. Pairing just two directors would generate annual savings of nearly $1 million, and we would still have plenty of diversity of opinion from the remaining 14 directors. For the record, I note that from February 2007 until February 2008, GE Commercial Finance added 9 new officers. The increase of nearly 40% did not produce a concomitant boost in the unit's performance. Quite the contrary. Obviously, I do not know the answer to this complex question, but I do know that action is needed. In sum, I believe excellent board performance is more likely to be achieved if we pick directors just as players are picked in professional sports. We share owners deserve a team that looks more like the Utah Jazz than the next League of Women Voters panel questioning a presidential aspirant like Mitt Romney. We know if the Jazz or the Celtics or the Lakers are winners by looking at the scoreboard, not by considering what they look like individually. The vaunted redeemed team of USA basketball at the Beijing Olympics was composed entirely of African-American players, and NBC commentators never bemoaned their lack of diversity. Properly so, they were gold medal winners. I accept the need for collegiality on our board. What I reject is cronyism and incompetence. It defies reason and experience to believe that a company that occasionally errs in selecting some of its officers from a feedstock it knows intimately would not have a similar record in selecting directors whom it knows primarily by reputation or recommendation. I do not want an elitist board that knows all the answers. I want an activist board that takes courageous action when needed and consistently asks all the right questions. Gretzky-like, they should play where the puck, not where the puck is, but where it is going to be. To move that wish from validity to reality requires the leadership of those seated and introduced at the front of this auditorium. Accordingly, I sincerely say to the board, all GE share owners need your immediate help. For without measurable progress in the next 6 months, I will resubmit my proposal.
Great. Thank you. Microphone number two. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Melt. I'm Ron Flowers from Erie, Pennsylvania. I'm president of the GE Retirees Group in Erie. We're here every year, and we'll be here every year as long as I'm alive, just like Helen Carini, to work for the betterment of the GE retirees, who, by the way, is the largest voting bloc who vote on shares. So we are important. The company has already told us, they called our union leaders in early in the year, and they said in this coming up, this upcoming negotiations, they are going to be asking for a specific health care change. A health care change is going to affect financially the people who work for General Electric and a lot of the retirees. When there were layoffs, you came to the older workers in Erie and you told them they were supposed to lay off 1,800 people. You urged the people, the older employees, to retire. Well, 600 of them took you up on it and they retired. And now that they're retired on a fixed income, now you're going to come back at them and ask for more money out of their pensions in health care benefits. In a speech at West Point, you said the era of meanness and greed are over. You said, in too many situations, leaders divide us instead of bringing us together. As a result, the bottom 25% of the American population is poorer than they were 25 years ago. And you said that is just wrong. Well, I really appreciate that statement, and I agree with you. That is wrong. The health care system you're trying to put forth right now is pushing the retirees towards that 25%, and that's wrong.
Thank you.
Well, one more quick thing. GE consistently brags about one thing, how much cash they have, and they're looking for investments. Well, I would like to make a suggestion. How about an investment in the retirees that built your company?
Thank you, sir.
That's the reason why you're here where you are today.
Great.
Thanks.
Microphone number one. Yes, ma'am.
Good morning, Mr. Amalt. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you as being a uniter. It appears this morning you have united both the far left, MoveOn.org, the unions, PETA. You've also united the far right, the Tea Party movement, Freedom Works, and conservative voters. What we're all concerned about is your unhealthy relationship and apparently too close relationship with the Obama administration. You sit currently on the board of the President's Council on Jobs and Opportunity. Yet during the stock market meltdown in 2008, as GE faced mounting financial problems, GE borrowed $16 billion from the Federal Reserve and was given special treatment by the government when the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, insured up to $139 billion in debt issued by GE Capital, GE's financial arm. What we're concerned about, both the far left and the far right, is that now there's an increasingly educated voter population. There's an increasingly educated consumer population. And as shareholders, this is concerning to us. We're concerned because both the left and the right and everybody in the middle is extremely concerned about your relationship with the Obama administration, corporate cronyism, corporate welfare, and greed. And as a shareholder, this concerns all of us. But congratulations, you've united both sides against GE.
Thank you. Microphone number two, Kevin.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Maher, and I'm from Lynn, Massachusetts, the birthplace of the General Electric Company. On April 15, 1892, Thomson-Houston Electric was merged with Edison Electric and became known forevermore as the General Electric Company. Thank you also for your remarks about Helen Quirini. Of course, she's not here with us physically today, but she certainly is in spirit. And in that spirit, I'd like to have anyone and everyone that worked at GE and is a retiree from GE to stand up, to be applauded by everyone, because you are the people who made this company the company that it is today. Please, Dennis, stand up. Come on. You worked with us. You know it. If you work for GE, you should stand up and be counted. Anyone that worked for GE has to be a stand-up person and be counted. And having said that, I want to thank you for what you do on jobs for the with the Obama administration. You have said, and I've read all of your speeches, that you mean to bring manufacturing back into this country, and you're showing it, okay? I thank you for that as somebody that worked in manufacturing all my life and understood the importance of manufacturing in bringing it as a base for our economic society. I know that when you were talking about Helen, you know, she had a lifetime of service, and just like she had, you said earlier that GE solves consumer problems and society problems. Well, Helen Quirini devoted her life to solving problems of retirees and helping society. Picture this. In 1946, in Schenectady, New York, a young girl goes into the personnel office and is hired in GE. She's thrown into the factory, goes into the factory, a young woman, not many, very many women in the factory, you know, except because of the wars and shortage, she gets involved in the union there. At that time, by the way, just to put a point of reference, women's work was paid less than men's, and it was not against the law. And she saw that as an individual and fought against that and fought against all kinds of unfairness all her life. and was written about in the AARP. She's even had plays portrayed about her called Helen and Jack when she first met Jack Welch, which has been seen by thousands. You can actually see that one-hour play if you go to www.geretirees.org and see the play about Helen and Jack and what it means to her coming to the share owners meeting for every year for many, many years. In addition to that, in terms of uniting and meeting with the retirees, you have agreed to come put together a group of retirees from around the country this fall to listen to our concerns. Well, I just want to give you one example of why we need to understand and listen to those concerns of retirees. I had a gentleman come down to my office. His name was Robert Reese. He had 43 years service at General Electric Company. His pension was $944 a month. That's after medical deductions, $944 a month. In February of this year, and this is something that you may not have control over, but it affects the retirees. His pension went down by $50 a month in February. And it went down because of a tax credit expired in December 31st for the middle-income people of this country, while at the same time the Bush tax cuts were extended to those making over $250,000. I hope that when you attend that meeting in this fall that we're putting together, that you listen to us. And at these negotiations, Jeff, we cannot and should not hurt retirees. And Helen would have me say, Jeff, we need a cost of living and an increase.
Okay,
thank
Kevin,
you.
Thank you very much. Last speaker here, number two. Yes, sir.
I'm Fred Lieber from Williamstown, Massachusetts. Mr. Immelt, the company has announced its intention to undertake another stock buyback, even though the most recent one was a considerable disappointment. In February 2008, you wrote to share owners that the world had gone from easy credit to no liquidity in the blink of an eye. But then GE persisted in using its limited liquidity in buying back 99 million shares for $3.1 billion. Right up until we suspended the program in September of 2008. We paid an average of $31 a share for stock we could now acquire for about $20 a share. That's a loss of $1 billion. 3 weeks later, we borrowed $3 billion from Warren Buffett and gave him warrants to boot. Isn't that the $3 billion that we just spent on the buyback? Add the $1.2 billion we will have paid Buffett if we buy back the preferred in October of this year, and we have lost about $2.2 billion in the 2008 buyback, not counting opportunity costs. With that record of poor performance, why should we initiate another buyback without a thorough discussion in this forum? Even with the recent increases, the dividend is still less than half what it was 3 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I believe the inspectors of election are ready to announce the outcome of the voting, so thank you very much for the discussion this morning. Let's end the discussion and go to the inspector's report. Mr. Barbera of IVS Associates will be presenting the report of inspectors. Mr. Barbera, do you have a report for us?
Mr. Chairman, the inspectors of election have completed an initial count of the votes cast at this meeting in person or by proxy. Proxies representing approximately 8,186,000,000 shares, or 77.1% of the total shares eligible to vote, were received. Other shares have been voted at this meeting by ballot or by proxy. On the basis of our initial count, the inspectors announced the following results. On the election of directors, each of the nominees received at least 5.2 billion favorable votes, and all nominees have been elected. With regard to the ratification of KPMG as auditors, 4 is 98% of the shares voted against 2% of the shares voted. The management proposal regarding the advisory resolution on executive compensation, 4 is 79.3% of shares voted against 20.7%. the proposal regarding the frequency of future advisory votes on executive compensation. For 1 year, 85.4% of shares voted. For 2 years, 1%. For 3 years, 13.6%. The shareholder proposals, first regarding cumulative voting, for is 26.6% of shares voted, against 73.4%. The proposal regarding the future stock options, for 29.7% of shares voted, against 70.3%. The proposal regarding the withdrawal of stock options granted to corporate executive officers, for 7% of shares voted, against 93%. The proposal regarding the climate change risk disclosure, for 4.7% of shares voted, against 95.3%. The proposal regarding the transparency in animal research, for 9.7% of shares voted, against 90.3%. Mr. Chairman, this initial tally is subject to verification, and the final tabulation may reflect small changes in the vote I have announced. The final tabulation will be set forth in the formal report of the Inspectors of Election to the Secretary of the Company, which will be made after the vote has been verified. This concludes our report.
Thank you, Mr. Barbaro. On behalf of the Board of Directors, I'd like to say thanks for all of our investors who are here this morning. We had a great discussion. To the retirees, thank you for your service. To the G employees, I'm proud of you. And thanks to the great people of Salt Lake City. You've been a great host to me and the GE Board. Good morning, and thank you again for your support of GE. Thank you.